You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Guantanamo torture, Afghanistan, and Iraq wars, these are some of the fallout of 9/11. It's a cautionary tale, reprisals that have been infinitely more destructive than the attacks themselves. Now India is faced with the Mumbai attacks. Some 200 people have been killed, and the call for vengeance rises loudly in some quarters. To discuss the pressures faced by the people in India, I'm joined in the studio by Hari Sharma. He is the president of SANSAD, the South Asian Network for Secularism and Democracy. Good morning and welcome to Red Eye, Hari.
Good morning, Mordecai.
Why might India have been targeted for a terrorist attack?
It's not the first time. Let me begin by reminding you and your listeners that today is December 6th. It's the anniversary of the demolition of Babri Mosque in 1992. I remind you of that because it's very significant as to what that mosque demolition had actually done. It was the beginning of a large-scale alienation of the Muslim population in India. Nobody who participated openly and publicly in that demolition has yet been brought to justice. And there have been a number of other attacks on the Muslim communities, here, there, everywhere. The most important and dramatic of all of them was the one in Gujarat in 2002. Here again, except for a few people who have been found guilty, and that is mainly because of the civil society perseverance of taking up the cases, the main actors are still roaming free. What this means is that the Muslim community internally has good reasons, objectively speaking, to be aggrieved, to be discriminated against, to be treated as second-class citizens of India, if at all as citizens of India. And there is an onslaught of political ideological nature coming forth from the Hindu right that Muslims actually don't belong to India. Now, that's one aspect of it. Secondly, if you look at the external policies of the government of India over the last 10, 15 years, India has consciously and aggressively decided to become part of the American game plan. They are strategic partners in military affairs. They are strategic partners in diplomatic affairs. They're opening up their economies, their resources, their cheap labor to American multinationals in a very, very systematic and aggressive way. India is seen now as a partner of U.S. design. And India is not just seen. India is seen also as to what it is doing in Afghanistan, what it is doing in Iraq, how it has alienated Iran on a number of issues over the years. Iran and India have been proud to be very friendly over many, 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 many decades, if not centuries. So that is now sacrificed. On the other hand, India is openly courting relationships with Israel. Israel is perhaps, I'm not 100% sure, but I think I am largely sure that Israel is the largest supplier of military hardware to India, along with training and counseling and advising on a number of issues. So all that is seen by that section of the Muslim population which has taken on America, which has produced Al-Qaeda type of things, which has produced jihadis. Now, they are not the majority of the Muslim population. They don't represent the population of Pakistan or even other Muslim countries of the world. But nonetheless, they are a factor today on a global scale. And for them, India is a legitimate target.
Well, after the attack on the Twin Towers in New York, among other things that the American did, obviously two major wars that they've launched, They also established the prisons for Guantanamo. Is something at all possible in a similar way in India in relation to the pretext of the attacks in Mumbai?
Well, India doesn't have to create special jails and special cells outside the territory. Within India, there are numerous jails and lockup stations and torture chambers, and they have been quite active. They have been quite busy. In every time there is an attack of some kind of terrorist attack in India, almost immediately Muslim young boys, young men from Muslim neighborhoods are picked up, almost immediately, by dozens. Until today, we have not found a single case in which they could have been found guilty, even by association. Only recently now, it has become clear, and evidence is very much there, that many of these attacks on mosques and attacks on public places were actually carried out by the Hindu right wing. But the Hindu RSS people have their own terror squads, backed up, surprisingly, by even the people in India's military, and those cases are going on. Coming back to your question, or the essence of your question, yes, soon after that, there were analogies were made. This is India's 9/11. Now, it's silly to even talk like that, but there is a message in it. If America could go after Afghanistan, if America could go after Iraq, why shouldn't India be going after the targets, known targets in Pakistan, or suspected targets in Pakistan? Why shouldn't India adopt similar draconian laws like the Patriotic Act in America? The Patriotic Act in America has already encouraged similar acts in India and other countries of the world already, but there's a pressure to legislate more draconian laws. They are being opposed, constantly being opposed by a large number of people in India and in the diaspora. So that's what is happening. The fact remains, there's a very interesting thing is, I think in this whole Mumbai tragedy, the real beneficiary which comes out of it is the right-wing Hindu nationalist fascist forces. The three people who were the first one to be killed, are these I forget his last name, Karkare, I believe. He was the chief of investigation of the anti-terrorist squad in Mumbai. He was the one who had found evidence of the Hindu groups behind those attacks. He was the one who arrested or made it possible to arrest a Hindu religious lady, saint or so-called sadhvi, and a military officer, serving military officer. Those were killed, three of them. He and two of his top lieutenants were killed, first one to be killed. Now, questions are being raised. Why? What's behind it? In what way one can find links between the BJP people in India, RSS people in India, and the terrorists? There could not be a direct link, for sure. But one thing is quite clear. The attack of this nature, so calculated, so disciplined, so well planned, so well executed, with every detail of the hotel they had, every detail, which the police didn't have. They knew every lobby, every staircase, everything they knew. So there's a question as to why it happened. And I think increasingly people are suspecting that it could not have been pulled through without some support system within India. Who are they? We don't know. We also don't know till today whether there were 10 people or 20 people. 10 are, they started by saying 20. They kept reducing it to 10. People are wondering if some people have actually escaped and they are now hiding somewhere, sleeping cells in India. We don't know who they are.
So in this dynamic between the Hindu nationalists, the Hindu fascists who have been responsible for many atrocities, and the call for revenge against the Muslim population of India or perhaps in Pakistan. Are there active debates within the political sphere as to what option to choose in relation to these pressures?
The pressure that they will not be actively talking about attacking Muslims. They don't do that. That's not the scheme. That's not the way it is done. They just do it. I'm very happy that it has not happened. Organized, calculated mob attacks, which often take the form of spontaneous attacks. It has not happened, and I don't know who to thank for it. Maybe the presence of the military in Bombay, maybe. But India is a big country. It could have happened anywhere else. It doesn't happen, and I hope it doesn't. But yes, the noise which is being made is to retaliate against Pakistan. The right wing within the Indian political spectrum is definitely asking go after Pakistan. Now, I think I must give credit, at least to some extent, to Manmohan Singh, that he is not falling for that. Although there was pressure from within Indian military to do that, there was some deployment at the border, enough to provoke Pakistan. Because Indian government knows that if we do that, the civilian government in Pakistan simply will disappear. And it is not in the interest of India for that to happen. Because we have had some very, very positive developments in terms of good neighborly relations, exchange, cultural exchange, opening up some more transportation routes and bus routes and train routes. All of that has been happening. And all of that could easily be derailed. And the people of India and the people of Pakistan, who incidentally, large number of them issued statements both in Pakistan and in India, and it's going on all till today. We don't want. If a military adventure takes place in Pakistan, then the civilian government is gone for sure, because the military will take over. Military till today, we have no evidence till today whether the military of Pakistan is under the direct control of the civilian government or not. Till today, we don't know. Till today, we do not know if ISI is under the control of the military or not.
Is the intelligence agency.
Inter-Services Intelligence Agency, which has been known for years, which was actually pumped up by the Americans during the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan. The whole ISI was pumped up. Tons of money and arms and everything was given to train Taliban. Taliban word is actually means one who has been through school. That's what it means. Talib means education. So Talibans were created, special schools were created with the money of the Saudis and the Western world. Now, and they were very active. And it is known fact now. I could be skeptic some years ago, but I am not anymore. That yes, they were very active in promoting terrorist attacks and militancy in Kashmir of at least for 10 years. Where are they now? Have they folded up their plans of jihad and Islamic world, or they are still, or are they under the control of military, and military being under the control of the civil government? It's a very open question and very frightening questions.
So the real dynamic, as you see it, is taking place more in terms of Pakistan and any consequences in that society from an aggressive response initiative from India.
Mm-hmm. That's what we're going on. Military of Pakistan is mobilizing itself, and they are saying that they are being provoked by India's mobilization on the borders. The military in Pakistan is very demoralized at the time. They are caught in this unwinnable war on the Afghan border. They're losing their cadre. They are losing their credibility in India, in their country. Even civilian government is very embarrassed and uneasy because they cannot tell Americans not to bomb in Pakistan, but they're continuing to bomb, and they do so, and yet it goes on. So the military wants to, one of the things I have been looking at with the help of people who are analyzing the situation is that military wants to pull out of that Afghan border and get into the India-Pakistan border. whether it's a good thing or not. Ultimately, Mordecai, the issue is what is happening in South Asia. It has happened to a large extent already in Pakistan, and it is beginning to happen in India now. Is the American involvement and aggression and occupation of Afghanistan is creating all kinds of spillover effects. This is what is happening in Pakistan, the Talibanization of Pakistan politics. The tribals on Pakistan's side are brothers and sisters of the tribals on the Afghanistan side, which is natural and understandable. So now I think if America can be defeated in Afghanistan, if Barack Obama could make a 180-degree turn and say, all right, my statements were wrong, we pull out of Afghanistan, then perhaps a good basis of normalization of civil administration in Pakistan and normalization of relationships between India and Pakistan will improve.
On that positive note, thank you very much, Hari.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Professor Emeritus Hari Sharma. He is the president of SANSAT, the South Asia Network for Secularism and Democracy.